I don't know if some of you have heard, listened to any of the Dharma talks by Jack Kornfield, but he has a number of things he kind of repeats a lot. And one of them is he or someone saw a sign at a casino once that it said, you have to be present to win. So he really liked that one, you know. So we're not exactly here to win, but we are here to be present, and the value of it. And so this idea, so we often, in the mindfulness tradition at least, you know, talk about being present. Some people have the related term presence, that we practice, the practice of presence. And that in the chaplaincy world, that's often a common language, that maybe in the insight world, people talk about we're practicing mindfulness, awareness, such things. But in the chaplaincy world, people practice presence. And but the way that the word presence, can you hear me okay? The way the word presence is used is it's a richer or broader word than just simply being aware and mindful. Because it's, I think for people coming from this tradition I teach in, the insight tradition, I think we would probably default to the idea that that presence means being present to the present, being attentive, being aware of the present, as opposed to practicing the presence of God, the presence of the sacred. Maybe in Buddhist traditions, the presence of emptiness you would talk about, or the presence of non-clinging. There's something to be present with and to, more than just being attentive to the situation. We're attentive with something here that's in ourselves, in the world around us, or something. And so, in the chaplaincy world, some people might talk about presence to the sacred, presence with the sacred. And in some degree, when someone is a chaplain, it's variable how much this is granted to them by the people they're with, or how much they bring with them. But the chaplains are associated with religious world, the spiritual world, with the sacred. And so if a chaplain comes into someone's presence, they might grant you, or it might evoke in them some idea, oh, now we're in a different conversation. Now we're in a different realm than the doctor coming in, or the nurse coming in, or the person who's cleaning my room. Now we're being connected to something that there's very few people I can talk to about this, or very few people that I associate this kind of, you know, my background is, I was in church, and I went to church every day, you know, growing up, and that was so important, and now there's a chaplain here, I'm reminded about that, and that now it's coming alive for me. So there's an evoking the an association, but some people say a presence. It's more than association, it's more than a memory, but it's almost like a felt sense here in the moment. So but it's a practice of presence, and one of the key aspects of that is certainly being attentive, but being attentive in a non-reactive way. I think that's like the gold standard, if it's possible. So that you're not reactive means that you're bringing some of yourself, your judgments, your fears, your anxiety, to bear on the how you're being attentive. But if attention is one of your primary gifts to other people, how do you want that gift to be offered? How do you want it to arrive in people's laps or in people's hearts? So how you're being attentive is an important thing to consider. And so to be non-reactive, to be non-anxious. My wife, when she was raising our kids, she felt that one of her important roles with the kids was to be calm, to be non-anxious. Because if the parent is anxious, that teaches the kids they don't have to know why, but they think, oh, it's appropriate in this world to be anxious. And so they learn that that's the way it's appropriate to be. If the parent is at ease in this world, the kids learn, oh, the world is a place where it's okay to be at ease, and you know, I'm being kind of simplistic here, but there is that kind of thing. So the same thing for a chaplain. If the chaplain comes in and is more nervous than the patient, you know, there's a you know, that has a very different effect than if the chaplain comes in and is not anxious. If someone is anxious about their surgery or anxious about their dying, the chaplain can be someone who shows up caring and compassionate, but demonstrates not being upset, not being angry, not being afraid, not being reactive, to show that there's another way of being with this. And one of the things it might do is just makes people comfortable to share or to talk to someone, or they feel, oh, this person I can trust. And so now I can tell them how scared I am or upset I am. And that person just receives it in a way that just feels, wow, I could tell this person anything, and the person's not going to close down, not going to criticize me, and they're available for it. Wow, this is, you know, never had this experience in my life. And so, but if we come in with a lot of judgments and ideas, and or if we come in with bias, if we come in with preconceived ideas, we see someone and we assume that they're just like us, just like me, and they're going through the same experience as I would, or this person's really different than me, and so, you know, they're like this, that could really miss someone and actually cause a lot of harm. So a chaplain, how do they have this, you know, non-reactive attention that has been freed enough from our judgments, our preconceptions, our you know, stereotyping, all kinds of things that we do? And I think that one of the ways to do that is to have this 50% attention on ourselves, so that we can see bias, stereotyping, prejudice, judgments operating. I don't think we can assume we're not going to have them. In fact, if you assume you don't have them, you're probably in danger. And so, but to learn to see it, and then how do you hold it? How then are you a chaplain for yourself? How do you have those without having them get in the way of the relationship you're having with someone? Is there some way of doing that? Some way of not? And if you feel ashamed of yourself or guilty of yourself, that probably doesn't then translate to a good way of being attentive to the other person. So this way of stepping back and learning how to be aware of yourself and aware of what's really happening inside, and then the how you're aware of that, how you know yourself, is so important. How to hold yourself in all kinds of ways with some non-reactivity, some ease, some spaciousness, some openness, that doesn't translate to believing yourself, doesn't translate to approving everything, but does not translate to condemnation and embarrassment or shame or, you know, or, you know, just, oh, this is how it is, and I have to be careful with this. Let me put a question mark behind every thought I have about that person so that I can look more carefully. Let me find out first. Let me learn how to be attentive and learn who this person is first. So the practice of presence, the practice of involves being sensitive to the fact that that there's the gold standard we're aiming towards is non-reactive attention, or non-anxious attention, or non-agenda-filled attention. Just kind of this open. And if you remember in the Being Buddhist and Black video that Ayo Yotunde talked about not knowing. She talked about, then she followed that by talking about that, love and respect and listening, a willingness to listen and to feel and to learn. I think that was a great little kind of summation of being present and being here. And so if you're willing to learn, that you begin with that, learn who this person is, find out who they are, before we rush to judgment, before we have ideas of what should be. So ideally, that takes time. Ideally, you would show up without agendas, without being in a hurry, and perhaps even if you only have a couple of minutes, it might be that you don't do much chaplaincy except offer a kind of clear attention that, wow, no one's seen me before at the hospital. No one stopped for me. No one really looked me in my eyes in a way, or looked me in my heart. I didn't, you know, just those 2 minutes were quite meaningful. So it can happen very quickly. And then you want to, as a chaplain, part of being present for someone is to have a human connection. And what does that human connection mean? Does it mean that you kind of are attuned to the other person? And what does attunement mean? How do you attune? How do you feel the other person? How do you get to know the other person? How do you adjust yourself so there's a kind of a resonance between you, or attunement between you, or some kind of connection, and how to make that connection appropriate for the relationship? It could be that it's clear the person, you know, is preoccupied in important things. They're watching football in the hospital television screen. And so how do you attune yourself to someone? You say, I'm the chaplain. The person says, oh, that's nice. That's nice. Look, he's looking, you know, he hasn't rejected you, but there's important things going on. So you might say, to be attuned, you might say, oh, can I join you? And rather than sitting facing him, you pull a chair up next to the person to watch the football game for a while. And then there's a commercial or something, and then you say, wow, that was really cool, that play. That's how you would attune yourself. And then, this is someone who shares my interest or is attuned to me. And then over time, the person might open up to something that they wouldn't open up to otherwise. So what does it mean to be attuned to someone, to go along with them, or to be in their world, enter their world with them, is part of this idea of presence. So that involves adjusting yourself according to what you see there and what's going on there. And what's the adjustments that are needed? What's the adjustment with where you sit, how you face them? Do you stand? Where do you stand? Do you lean forward? Do you pull back? Do you slump in the chair? Or do you sit up really straight? You kind of get a sense of what would you support this person to feel a connection to you and feel like you're on the same page a little bit and that you're someone they can trust. So presence is non-reactive attention. Presence is having a connection to others, having an attunement to others, and it's being self-aware. Self-aware of reactivity, self-aware of motivation, self-aware of the feelings we have and the emotions we have and what resonates, what happens in our hearts. And I would like to suggest that part of being really present as a chaplain is to, Ayuya Tunda wrote about, you know, is to love and respect, is to have a deep appreciation for the person, a deep respect for each person. And to keep that kind of on the forefront, that this is a when you're with this person, this is a person who has dignity, has value, has autonomy, has someone you can really appreciate for, and you're there to appreciate them. And I'm struck by how many people in this world don't have people who really appreciate them, don't have people who really offer respect. And in the healthcare system, there's a lot of that. I mean, it was kind of painful to listen to Ayo, and especially Ayo. I use her first name because I know her. So that's... it's you know, there's a big disparity in of how different people, black people, are treated by the healthcare profession, where there's a lack of respect for who they are. Ideally, the chaplain is a person who's always ready to respect, always ready, in a sense, to be the person's ally, support, champion. And so you'll meet people who are very different from you, and still you're there to be their person who really values them and lets them be heard and known and all these things. So this is the rich world of presence. And in the mix of it all, is sometimes there's more in the room than the person and you, but rather the we, and the we between you, what's created between you, might have elements of the sacred, of what the people's association with it. And people might immediately become quiet in a very nice way if you're the chaplain, or they might ask you to pray, and you're actually bringing into the room the presence of God or Jesus or Buddha or whatever is valuable for them. And you're sharing that with them. And how do you attune yourself to the sacred that they have, not just attune to them? So there's kind of a rich world we're into. And how, as a chaplain, do you do this and explore all this and take all this into account without being anxious, without being tight and concerned and in a hurry? And I'd like to say the way to do that is to monitor yourself and to become an expert at recognizing tension. Being an expert when you feel tension or stress or pressure within you to do something, to be some kind of way, you're probably starting to get in trouble. That's the area you have to be really careful with. And maybe you can't let go of your tension, but can you hold your tension in an open, spacious way? Can you know it's there and not let it interfere? Can you be your own chaplain for what's your tension? What it would mean to be your own chaplain for yourself, so that then you can be available to be people's chaplain for them, for others as well. So does this all make sense? Any questions about it? It's all good, because you're going to do it. You'll protect you protect yourself if you ask questions from having to do it. You ready? So I think what we'd like to try to do is to make this really random of who you're going to be with. And there's a odd number, so I think what I'd like to ask you do is if you can set up maybe every other one of you, set up two chairs that are kind of facing each other, but somehow over here, let's have three chairs. So can we do that? And everyone stand and get set it up so there's... every other person sets up a chair so we have the right number. Yeah, so Siri would do it, and Casey would set up a chair, and Elise would set up a chair, and
is
Kristen...
Is it warm enough now, or...
Yeah.
I am. Oh. Yeah. 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 Just two. That's the three, and everyone else is two. So okay. So you have two chairs. Hopefully you have it. Do we have enough? Two. Great. Okay. So you can move later you can move them around again a little bit so it'll spread out nicely. But okay, so now just wander around the hospital halls. Just wander around until you get the beep beep, please go to patient in room 102. Just wander around and just get on, like, who knows who you're passing in the hallways, and their suffering and what they're involved in, who they're helping, and just wander around. And so go to the closest chair to you. So hopefully that's relatively random. And so like we did before, just sit there with the other person. You don't know anything about what's going to happen next. And what is it like to be here, sitting here and maybe getting ready for an unknown exercise and being with someone, and with this person? It's possible you haven't had a conversation with this person so far in the program, or maybe you have. And what are your thoughts, feelings, ideas you have about this person, or about being with this person? Any feelings about being in an exercise with this person? Do you have any assumptions about this person from maybe from previous conversations, from the clothes they're wearing, from the socks they're wearing, whatever, something about them, anything? Are you pretty assumption free, or not assumptions? Is there something you think you know about this person that you're bringing with you? And what's this like for you? How are you being with this other person at this moment? In all the variety of ways that can be. So then, you can now have a little conversation, and the person who has the most colorful socks can be the first person to speak. And you don't have to share anything you don't want to share, but if you can just give the person a little bit of an account of what it was like for you to be sitting with them. You know, just what was going on in you, and what feelings, what thoughts, what wonderings, questions, what was it like to sit here with this person? And again, you don't have to share something that you feel uncomfortable with saying, but just give a sense of what it's like, mostly for your own sake, so you can hear yourself say it. So go ahead. Just keep talking. You can just go around and around. So then you can shift, change roles. The person who hasn't spoken now can speak about what that was like to be present with someone. It's nothing really about the person you're with, but it's all about yourself. How was it for you? So. Okay, thank you. So now, what I'll ask you to do is, when it's your turn to speak, you're just being yourself. But you're talking to a chaplain. But you have, it's a rather unusual situation with chaplaincy, because this chaplain has come to you and said, you know, before I... with you as a chaplain, I feel like I need to know something about you first. So when you're being yourself, just volunteer and let this chaplain know what you think the chaplain should know about you so that they can really kind of take you in and understand you before even the chaplaincy discussion begins. And again, it's self-selecting reporting that you're doing. But what would you like this person to know about you so they can offer you some kind of care, at the chaplaincy care? And this is gonna be longer, this conversation. So each of you do first until I ring the bell. But you'll have about 4 or 5 minutes to let this person know something about you. So it's in some ways it's a short time. Your whole life is, you know, would take a few days to explain. But in some ways it's a long time to say something. So I'll ring a bell in 4 or 5 minutes, and then you can pause for a minute or a moment, and then you can switch roles. And the group of three, if maybe after 3 minutes you can, I'll try to let you know, or maybe you can have a clock you can watch. Yes?
So is it 5 minutes of monologuing and the other person?
Yes. Yeah. Just fill in, just kind of think about that, all the things you would like this chaplain to know about you, so they can really take you in, really understand you, be ready for you when there's the real chaplaincy encounter happens.
True things about yourself.
What?
True things.
Oh, yeah.
Make up a sick or something.
Well, unless you're a chronic liar, then you could talk about that. But yeah, this is for real. This is for real. About who you... Okay, so you can start.
And what are things that I would
So maybe take a moment to kind of maybe close your eyes, breathe, check in with yourself from all that. Maybe take a few long, slow, deep breaths and let go and be ready for changing roles. And then the one of you, the one that was the chaplain, now gets to be yourself, and yourself as a chaplain. So then now the one who is yourself can explain to the chaplain what you think the chaplain should know about them, so you can receive good care.
Thank you.
So now you have some time to privately, with your eyes closed or not, as you wish, to reflect on what you learned about your partner. Do you think that how you think of them, how you understand them, how you'd approach them, how you'd be a chaplain for them, might have changed now that you heard from them what they thought you should know? So we're going to do another round of this, kind of letting people know something about yourself so that the relationship can maybe, in a healthy, respectful way, take this into account as part of it all. This time, tell the chaplain, it doesn't have to be a chaplain, now you're just being friends here. And that is, but tell your partner, what is your preferred way of being in conflict? If you're going to have conflict with someone, how would you like to process it? What's the healthy way for you to process conflict? Would you prefer to have time to go alone for a while and think about it? Would you prefer to deal with it immediately? And people have different conflict styles that work for them. Introverts are different than extroverts and all kinds of things. And so if you wanted to if you were going to have a conflict with this person, what should they know about you so that you can maybe find your way through the conflict in a nice way? And we'll do it just the same way, just a monologue, and then the other person listen. And as you do all this one, this time around, remember to do the self-monitoring. As you're talking about it, check in. What's going on for you? Like, oh, maybe you're already alarmed. Like, what's Gil thinking about? This is not a conflict resolution place. This is chaplaincy. Or And if you're listening, monitor yourself. See what's going on when this topic of conflict has entered the room. And you only need to disclose what you want to disclose, but what's your preferred way, healthy way, of dealing with conflict when there's one? If you could choose and design your own conflict resolution process that fits your personality, what would it be? So the first person can go. And it's about four minutes or so each one. So, taking a minute or so to just again close your eyes, breathe, check in. maybe some deep breaths, and on the exhale, letting go. To be a little fresher and ready to change roles. And then to begin again.
Getting to connect with them in a moment where, like, neither of us are hungry or tired, and there's, like, enough space to talk about the thing, and then where I can share where I'm at, and the other person can, like, really lift it and not get reactive, and that I would, you know, they would stay open. And then I would do the same for them. Like, I would listen and not get reacted.
Not someone I love. It's a random person.
And I think that, like, if those things, like, I can be really open in conflict. Sometimes too open, actually. Sometimes deferential. Too deferential. But I think that, like, yeah, just, like, a balance of, like, staying really open and then, but not losing myself. And still, like, saying what I think for when I'm hurt. And then, like, and also some, like, good connection time, probably before and after. Yeah. Like, okay, I'm pulling this as an example, but, like, with my partner, our conflict goes better if before we talk about something challenging, we're like, and I'm here because I love you. You know, like, just, like, having that basis of, like, oh, yeah, like, we don't need to get reactive because that's not what this is about. Like, and then, like, also probably having that connection time after.
Yeah.
You know?
I might be crazy.
Because that's somebody I'm really intimate with. It's someone I'm less intimate with. I think kind of like nipping something into the bud is good. Like, not like if a little like sort of point of harm happens or something. That would be that.
Okay, so we're going to continue this little bit. I hope that's okay with you. Are you okay enough, everyone? If you want to stand and stretch and kind of shake out, and please do. Whatever you need to take a little breather here for a moment. Okay, so you can sit down again with your chaplain or your partner, your friend. All of the above. And so now, just an open discussion between the two of you on the topic of what difference might it, how might you be a chaplain differently after having learned all this about your partner here? You learned about a little bit about the background, what they wanted you to know. You learned about how they deal with conflict, what their preferred way is. How might this make a difference for you now as you approach them as a chaplain? Is it different than how it would have been otherwise? Would you come in a better way? Is it worse now that you know so much? You're better off if you do nothing? How is it? What's the difference for you? So just whatever comes to your mind as you just talk about it together back and forth.
Totally.
Before we go on, maybe we could have maybe two or three comments about what you might have learned about being present for someone in chaplaincy so far. This exercise so far, has it taught you anything about the kind of presence, attention, how you're present with someone, what skills it takes, what's useful for you?
I feel like I'm always ganky to get the mic, but safety came up.
Safety.
Both ways in communication and how important is a chaplain, like an easy way is the five precepts to feel safe enough to share what's on your heart or for someone to share with you in bringing that presence, not just calmness, but that container. And that's something I noticed that I appreciated and also was receiving and giving.
Great. So. Very nice. Thank you. What did you learn this morning that this exercise that might be useful for you if you're a chaplain for someone? How to do it, or how not to do it?
For me, what seemed to help is to take time to understand the other person. In my case, I probably had limited information about the person, so trying to engage in a conversation so I got a better understanding about his background, his goals, his intentions, where he's going, so that they could engage in a much more skillful conversation, so to speak.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Green light, the light should be on.
Yes. I think it's very helpful to have a conversation about a person's background, because anything important enough for them to bring up may bring up what may be a conflict for them going forward in whatever crisis has called them to be interested in speaking to a chaplain. So it's just more... it's grist for the mill. Maybe it's suggestions of what may be an issue for them, even if they don't present it as an issue. It's obviously setting a little bit of a setting some priorities for them.
Great, great. And in terms of this issue of conflict, I mean, it's you're not going to sit down with some stranger and say, "What's your conflict style?" But you might be sensitive that there might be a different conflict style, different way of comfort than what you're familiar with. They might have a whole different way. I don't know how you was with your partner, but there's a wide range of, you know, how people, their comfort level, how they'd like to be in conflict, if they're going to be in conflict. And two people can miss each other because they have different styles. And they think they're, you know... So if you don't know that about someone, then what kind of care, sensitivity do you bring about the challenges that might exist with the situation, or what the challenge they're involved in? Maybe they're in conflict. They're talking to you about the conflict they have with their family or someone. You have a very different conflict style. So you just tell them what they should do, right? But it's nothing to do with what works for them. All kinds of things, right? So be sensitive. So this is great. We don't have that much time, so I want to do one more round. And this time, you get to be each other's chaplain. And one of you gets to be a chaplaincy trainee, which you happen to be, coincidentally. And you were assigned to watch that video of Lama Rod Owens and Pamela Ayo Yotunde, about being black and what's it say? Anyway, her video, you know.
Black and Buddhists.
And you were asked as part of your training to look at this, to watch this this video and these interviews and what they had to say about chaplaincy. And it's something about that has some bearing on the training you're doing and some relationship to what you're doing and how you might be a chaplain. And you're asked to really think about this and reflect on it, and you've been given the opportunity to do it with another chaplain, not a chaplaincy trainee, but a chaplain. Aren't you so lucky? And some of it might be challenging for you, some of it might be inspiring, some of it might touch on things that are difficult for you, and you're so lucky to have a chaplain to bring this to, someone who's going to kind of just, you can be honest with and tell them how it was, and you know, find out what's going on. And that's the conversation you're going to have. And so when you're yourself as a trainee, just share a little bit what it was like and you know, what's up for you around the video and what happened, and if there's something, anything challenging about it, this is your chance to talk to a chaplain about it. And as a chaplain, your job is to be present, be available, be attentive, be safe, be caring, and maybe not solve their problems, but offer them a context for the whole thing. Make sense? So you can start. Maybe you already have a pattern of who starts. If not, you can just, someone can offer maybe. Who's the chaplain and who's the chaplain's trainee? And you'll have about 8 or 9 minutes for each one. So there's about maybe 2 or 3 minutes now to bring this to a close with your partner. You've been together now a long time,
forever.
and we'll either that or come up here and we'll marry you. I have 2 or 3 minutes just to kind of, there's no closure, but just something, way of bringing it to a close, like thank you and that was great, or wow, let's get married, or let's clearly not whatever. Just finish it, you know, something that brings closure. Okay. One of the skills for a chaplain is to how to handle a chaplaincy encounter that comes to a very sudden end. Because that happens. Suddenly, like, wait a minute, we're in the middle of talking about the deepest things in the person's life, and what? They have to go to surgery? Or So now bow and come back into the big circle. So that was a, you know, a long time for an exercise like that here with another person or two others. And thank you for the group of three for somehow managing and without much instruction to figure out how to adapt accordingly. And and so it was all, in a sense, it was all leading up to being the chaplain for someone, a chaplaincy trainee who had watched that video. So it was all leading to that. And so when you were the chaplain during this last exercise, did any of the previous make a difference for you? Did it teach you something about how to be a chaplain? Were you a little bit more present than you would have otherwise? Were you more listening? Were you more... Did you make yourself safer? Or did you... You know, was there some kind... Did you learn something in all this about how... Did it change how you were with those... With your... At the end? Or were you just the way you usually are? And... You're just content. You're just like, don't want anyone tell you how to be. You're just going to be whatever way you want as a chaplain. And so, some comments, please. We have 5 minutes, so some brief comments, and it'd be nice to have a few people commenting. Yeah, but I think you're the designated icebreaker right now. So go ahead this time. Thank you for your self-awareness. And someone's going to be sorry that they let you go first. You'll go ahead.
So the reaction to the person sharing their reaction to the...
Yes, yeah. What was that like for you to be the listener, the chaplain, to them as they processed that video?
It was rewarding because it was rich and as a shared experience. And so that's something a little different than I think we normally encounter as a chaplain. Because then... Because we have the shared, like, at least the experience of sharing this, and then, yes, and being mindful of those reactions to just take in the flow of information that was being shared. And that was really nice to just settle into that and be open to all the wisdom and their reactions. That was quite delightful. And everything before that was also really helpful, all the prep work.
And your reactions, how are they? Beyond just delightful.
Exciting, enthusiastic, like a little go energy, like, yeah, yes, and, like, let's talk about that. Like, that was really cool, and I agree. I'm wanting to resist that impulse. Or not wanting to, just seeing it.
Great, great.
And that desire for connection.
Great. So you get to choose who does next without much thought.
Casey, I'm choosing you.
My reaction to... Conrad's feedback, he's a great student. He actually wrote a summary of the video. So he said, in case you don't remember, here, read this first. So it was really helpful. I mean, I read it and I said, okay. So, you know, it's fresh in my mind. Just really impressed with his hard work. You know, he takes things seriously. I'm the opposite. So that was my reaction to it. Right. Okay.
Here you go.
Yeah, I thought it was wonderful what the two I was listening to they very much appreciated the video, but what they expressed was what it brought out for them based on their own experiences, their own feelings, and it seems like there was less new things that came out as it reinforced things that they felt about what was being discussed and the issues therein. And it was very individual because although there were some common threads, I thought the two people really had two different sets of things that they were really coming up for them.
And what was it like for you to what was it like for you to bring a certain kind of presence to listen to them?
Oh, I thought it was wonderful. I mean, I was really kind of rapt because I was interested in hearing this, these so true feelings, and you know, it really rang true for me that they believed this, and these were from their experiences, and it felt very good to me.
Very, very nice. But you know, being rapt is maybe a little bit dangerous for a chaplain, because then you're not tracking yourself enough.
That's true, and I may have failed a little bit there because I was so no, it's a good caution. Caveat emptor.
So maybe one more if you...
My apologies.
I noticed a tendency to want to, like, especially when I was playing the chaplain, I was wanting to jump into the conversation like just another, like we're just having a conversation about it, instead of being a supportive presence for my partner to process the experience. So that was, I was kind of dialing myself back. And then actually I did kind of insert a little commentary into our conversation. Yeah, but the frame of the conversation shaped how I was engaging beyond just, oh, we're just having a casual conversation about this.
Great. It sounds great that you were self-aware enough to know yourself, know what you were doing, and held yourself back, mostly. Very good, very good. Okay, so hopefully this gave you some direction for learning more and more, lifetime learning, of what it's like to bring presence, to attention, respect, care, love, learning, to bring attention to someone and how valuable that is. And sometimes it's all it is sitting quietly with someone, and the kind of attention you bring is like the... That's the, even if you do speak, it's the what's conveyed in silence that's almost like the most powerful part of the chaplaincy sometimes. Sometimes it only gets really deep or significant because you've taken the time to get to know them and you hear them out and you learn much more about it. And then because of that, you have so much more information to appreciate them. And maybe just the act of appreciation after you hear all that will make such a big difference for them because they've been heard. And they know they've been heard, and someone still respected them, even then, or appreciated them. A lot of the presence, being present for people in chaplaincy, is not about fixing anything. It's not about solving their problems, not probing in there to figure out where they can let go or whatever. Just really, the power of being present is really phenomenal, and it's a very sophisticated. It's very simple and very sophisticated at the same time. It takes a lot of self-awareness to do this well. And as you do it...
More
this afternoon about this. And so, yeah, so we'll keep going. So anyway, so that's the morning. Thank you very, very much for going along all this way. And you didn't really know what was happening, and you seemed to be engaged, you know, willingly. So thank you. So there's lunch, an hour, 12 to 1:30. And I will not be at lunch because Jennifer got me onto the Kaiser Ethics Committee. which is, has a meeting at 12:30 that I have to go to on Zoom. So I'll be upstairs meeting as a kind of Buddhist chaplain for the ethics committee at the local hospital.
You are a representative, a religious representative of the community.
Yes. Yeah.
So let's be clear. Yes. There's a strong community for like a community religious. This one has guilt.
Great. Thank you.